to episode number 15. Really nice number 15 of the Foodie Flashback, the podcast where we talk about food, food-related memories, and everything that goes with that. My guest today is like a very long-time podcaster. I mean, probably one of the first ones. I don't think you were the first, but you were one of the first ones.
No, absolutely not the first.
Adam Christensen, a.k.a. MacCast. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Patrice?
Doing good, doing good. I mean, you started like a very, very long time ago with MacCast, right?
December 13th, 2004.
Wow, that is almost, I mean, you're closing in on 16 years. That is crazy.
Absolutely.
That's a crazy long time.
It was a few months after I discovered podcasting. not very long after that, I just started doing one.
Yeah, and I mean, that was like, I remember podcasts being around that time, but it definitely wasn't like a big thing yet. Like, you were very, very early.
Oh yeah, there was no directories. There was no I try to remember how we used to find shows. I think as far as like a pod catcher, you know, like something to read the RSS feed and get podcasts. I want to say the only thing around at the time was something that Adam Curry himself wrote, and it was like an Apple script.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there were also like, I mean, there were no like services or websites or anything you could go to. Like, it was all you basically, right?
You went to the individual websites, yeah. Mm-hmm. People had their RSS feeds, and I did my RSS feed by hand.
You know, like, wow,
there were no tools. Yeah. It was early days.
Yeah,
we were figuring it all out.
No hosting companies that host your podcast or anything.
Libsyn,
like that.
Libsyn, and all those guys didn't come along for a couple of years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, but I mean, you've been doing this for a long time, and I've been listening for a long time, and I always enjoy listening to you. And I think for a lot of people, you're still like, let's say at least in the Apple community, I think you're still like maybe one of the two people who like everybody listens to, kind of. I mean, you probably you and Ken Ray.
I appreciate that. I don't know if that's the case anymore, but yeah,
I think so. I mean,
a lot of people have stuck with it, and I really appreciate that. I've been around a long time, yeah, so that helps.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad. I mean, at least everybody I know is listening, so I can definitely tell you that. And for some weird reason, it took me a long time to start doing it. Like, I knew about it, and I knew you, but for some reason, I have this aversion against, like, news podcasts of some sort, and then at some point, I was just, okay, you have to do it, and then I just, like, I actually went back in your catalog. I didn't go all the way to the beginning, because then I probably would still be listening to it by now. but no, I went back at least a little bit and tried listening to it.
Yeah,
it's really good.
Yeah, there's not a lot of evergreen content in technology. Mm. You know, it's like technology changes so fast. If you're going back and listening to old episodes, you're listening for nostalgia, not for probably information.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it might actually be interesting. Like, I mean, to see what was happening and what was like really interesting back then, and like the tips and tricks you're giving and so on. How much of that still applies today? Like, sometimes that might actually be interesting. Maybe I should do that. Like, just pick random episodes, just jump back like a couple of years or 10 years and just see.
Well, yeah, luckily Apple tries to keep, you know, the core of the operating system pretty much the same. So maybe some of those tips and tricks apply, but you know, as you get into newer operating systems, I'm not so sure how much, you know, tips from Mac OS Panther or something are going to really come in handy these days.
You never know. Like, you might unearth something that still works today and nobody has thought about it for like 15 years. Yeah, exactly. You never know. So, I mean, this is not a tech podcast, so we're definitely going to talk about food. I always like to ask, like, what's your definition of a foodie, and do you consider yourself one?
That's a great question. I do not probably consider myself a foodie. I like food. I enjoy eating food. I eat a lot of food. Mm-hmm. But I'm not super into it. Like, it's not my thing, like the way, you know, Apple and technology is my thing. So I kind of think of foodies as those people who, that's just something that's a really big part of their life. Mm-hmm. I think it's a thing that they have a big emotional connection to, probably, mm-hmm, in mm-hmm. a lot of ways, and are very passionate about. I think it's like, you know, anything that is a hobby or something that you enjoy, it's, you know, that thing that puts it over the top of being just a thing to where it's something you're very passionate about. Mm-hmm. So you would, you know, seek out different kinds of foods and flavors you probably like. You know, it's probably something you're searching on online, and you're, you know, involving yourself in communities and those sorts of things. So that's what I would imagine being a foodie is, not being one, you know, but yeah, that's what I think.
And that's not you. Like, you're not going out to whatever recipe blogs to see what the whatever, what the best.
No,
I know, what the best mac and cheese recipe is.
I'm not Instagramming every meal I have at a restaurant, you know, and analyzing it. No, I think there's levels to a foodie, right?
You know, for like, sure. Yeah.
I have a good friend who just really enjoys food. I think he would consider himself a foodie, but you know, I think there's a spectrum, like a lot of things. You know, like there's people that are going to go out and, you know, start a whole YouTube channel on it and obsess on it, and you know, it's all over their social media and it's everything they're into. And then there's just people who, you know, do enjoy I think being parts of those communities and but are a little maybe more laid back and low key and aren't going to, you know, fire up a podcast. Yeah. So I think there's a whole spectrum.
And then there's those
like
people,
a lot of things in life.
Yeah. And then there's those people, they're like so much into food that they forget to take pictures of their food. And that's more like me. I always forget. Like, I'm like, I go to a restaurant and it's like awesome meal, and I'm like, I think about taking a photo when I'm done. I'm like, oh, like, I should have taken a photo of this. This was awesome. I'm like, okay, too late. So I'm definitely not as good at that. Maybe it's also just like...
Yeah, I'm not following all the trending restaurants in my area and all that sort of stuff, and sort of seeking out, you know, I couldn't name off, you know, chefs or something like that. And I'm sure, like, a lot of foodies probably are into certain chefs and certain restaurants. And, you know, they know if I go to this city or that city, I definitely have to go here or there, you know, that kind of play, that kind of stuff, I would imagine.
Yeah. But I mean, you still enjoy food from what you said.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
What kind of food? Like, do you have any particular cuisine, or is it like all over the place?
Well, a lot of American food, as you like, what people would consider classic American food. But yeah, we've been, my wife is starting to get started into cooking a lot. You know, like a lot of people, she's into a lot of the cooking shows. You know, Great British Bake Off has become a big thing in our house and that sort of stuff. And she just seems to really enjoy it. So we've been really trying to branch out. And a couple of years back too, you know, our kids, they're older now, but when they were younger, we decided that, you know, we need to probably try to introduce them to other kinds of cuisines. So, you know, an obvious one here, living in Southern California, not far from the border, I'm in San Diego. So Mexican, we eat a lot of Mexican food. and I love that. As a kid, I wasn't really into spicy stuff, but as I've gotten older, I've gotten a more and more tolerance for it. So we really enjoy and have started experimenting a lot with different kinds of Indian food, Indian cuisine. I also really like Thai food. Something that's kind of taken off here in San Diego a little bit too, and I think in other areas, is pho.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely love going out and getting a good bowl of pho. So all over the board, really. You know, I will try almost anything, you know, at least once, but kind of the staples that we eat are going to be American food, Mexican food, Thai, and Indian.
Yeah. I mean, American food is a lot of different things. So like anything specific?
I'm talking your classic stuff. I'm talking like burgers, hamburgers, you know, steaks, barbecue, you know, all in all its different flavors, whether you're talking about like, Southwest or Kansas City or, all those sorts of things. So I'm Texas barbecue. I'm a huge, barbecue fan. I absolutely, my favorite food in the world is ribs, probably beef ribs. And usually like a dry rub beef rib versus a sauce. I'm not really into the sauces, but I actually enjoy all of them. So like if you pull up my Instagram feed, the food I've probably ever taken a picture of is probably ribs. I'm always trying to seek out like a really good rib restaurant. And unfortunately, in San Diego, we have a couple that I deem are good, but I don't know that I've found the one that's through the roof. Mm-hmm. We did just find, so I always have ribs on my birthday. So my birthday was back in July. And we did find a new rib place that they do sort of more soul food style stuff. So black beans and rice and okra, you know, fried okra, and they had some amazing beef ribs. So we'll probably be going back for those.
I was just trying to remember what the barbecue place was I went to in San Diego. I think it was Little Piggy's Barbecue or something like that.
Like, did it have a pig on it? Well, if it was downtown and
no,
it was on
Coronado, so...
Oh, that's Coronado,
little tiny, like basically like tiny little like outdoorsy place. Like it had like a couple like tables outside and like a little house. It's not really a house, like a little like a little kitchen basically. It was basically just a kitchen, like a bathroom, and then just like outside seating. That was it. I don't remember what it was called. I think it was like Little Piggy's Barbecue, something like that. Maybe I should look that up.
The one that's popular with a lot of folks here and is pretty good is called Phil's Barbecue. They have a few locations throughout the county. And that's been my go-to place for a while. And I wish I could remember the name of this new place that we discovered there in Oceanside, which is North County San Diego. I can't remember the name of it, unfortunately, but it was delicious.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing that is definitely very good, I would say, in the San Diego area, definitely in Arizona, probably New Mexico as well, is Mexican food. I mean, there's just a massive Mexican influence. And like, I mean, anything Mexican there. I mean, there's just this joke from, I think it was Anthony Bourdain, who said, like, no matter what you eat in the U.S., it's always Mexican because it's cooked by Mexican chefs. Like, you could be eating Chinese food and it's Mexican because Mexican it's chefs
very cook likely,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like...
Well, and especially here where, you know, when you're this close to the border, we have a lot of immigrants and they bring all those great foods up, you know, with them, and they start restaurants, and, like, we have some of the best Mexican food. Yeah. Like, you can...
Definitely
good Mexican food, like in any whatever area of San Diego you're in, you can find that spot. You know, so carnitas and carne asada, and you know, you name it. It's just and all the different kinds of hot sauces and green sauce and red sauce and all, you know, all varieties. Yeah, we're kind of spoiled. So it's hard when you leave this area and maybe go to the Midwest where it's a little bit harder, or, you know, the Northeast or something like that.
Yeah, I talked to Jeff Gamet about that, and he, like, I mean, he, like, where he grew up, there was, like, for the longest time, no Mexican at all. And then, like, eventually someone started, but it was like one restaurant in the entire area. And, like, as you said, like, and it's the same for Arizona. Like, there's just so much because there are all those families, and most of, like, a lot of the restaurants, they do Mexican food for Mexicans. It's not for the Americans or whoever else is there. It's for the Mexicans in the area. So if you go there, I mean, you might have a harder time ordering if you don't speak Spanish, but you're going to manage somehow. But what you get is really, really good.
There is a fusion that happens, though, too. Mm-hmm. So I don't, like, one of my favorite things to have is called a California burrito. And it's typically carne asada, but then they also put in basically French fries.
Okay.
Yeah, it's delicious, you know, but you got guacamole and sour cream and all the hot sauce and, you know, maybe onions and that sort of stuff. And it's all, you know, done up. And but yeah, they throw in French fries, basically potatoes. Okay. So you're mixing a very American thing with a Mexican thing. It's delicious.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I've not seen that in Arizona yet. So maybe.
Well, it's California. Yeah, it's a California burrito.
I should try that. I do remember the first, like, real or as close to real Mexican food as possible I had was actually in San Diego the first time I was there. Because, I mean, the Mexican food you get in Europe is, like, nowhere near anything like that even. So,
yeah,
it is really good. It's probably... It's hard to tell. I mean, it's like, I'm definitely a foodie. It's hard to tell, but it's definitely one of my, like, or has become one of my favorite cuisines in the world, actually. Took a while. Yeah. I mean, as I said, like outside of like, yeah, Mexico or like southern parts of the US at least, or like the like California, Arizona, might be different, or it's definitely very different sometimes. I mean, yeah. a German understanding of Mexican food is nachos. Like, and not even good ones, like, right. That's basically it. And everything has to be hot, and that's it. Like, so, right. Yeah, it's more, I mean, maybe more Tex-Mex, if anything, but even that is not, like, not the same.
Right, yeah, so, that's a very different, but very good cuisine, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is, yeah. But as I said, like, even, not even good Tex-Mex, that's the other thing. But yeah,
that's
like,
definitely another fusion kind of food, right?
Yeah,
you know, you're mixing that American and Mexican cultures, yeah. And it's good.
Yeah, I mean, and that's pretty normal, I would say. Like, I mean, whenever people move to other places, they adapt to some extent to either local tastes or what's locally available, or also simply like sometimes the creativity like kicks in and they're just like, okay, what can I do here? Like, let's take the recipes I know, but like, let's see what I have here available that might be fresh and local and what I could do something with it. And then you have new things like happening. So it's definitely
that's the great thing about food, right? That's, mm-hmm. that's being a chef, you know, it's like taking the stuff that you love and then sourcing, like you said, what you can get locally. And that's the other thing is you might not be able to get all the ingredients that you need. That's often a challenge. Although, you know, in our world today, it's less and less with things like Amazon and global economies and things like that.
So. Yeah. And I mean, definitely in California, less of an issue because like it's just imported from Mexico. So might not be the same quality, but it's imported.
Stuff, yeah. Oh yeah. No, that's easy here. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm thinking of, you know, just, further off things.
I don't know. If you're like, in Minnesota,
might
or
not
something.
Be as easy to get all the Indian spices that you can get in India, or like the same brands, or you know, even that can vary, right?
Yeah, you that know, that can make
certain
a
brands
make a huge,
or certain. Yeah,
that can make a huge difference. So we talked already a little bit about your food you like, but I want to jump in a little bit or go back in time. I mean, a little bit longer. Okay. Like, what kind of food do you remember growing up? Like, where did you grow up? Like, did you grow up in California or? Like...
I grew up in California. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I grew up in California. I remember it's so cliche, but you know, a lot of the food that I grew up with is again, very Americanized kind of food. And Americanized food from the 60s, 70s. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the 80s, obviously, but my mom, you know, she's going to cook the things and the recipes she grew up with and the things that were popular at the time. So, you know, I remember things like a lot of casseroles. Mm-hmm. Casseroles were always a big thing. We had all different kinds. There was a Mexican casserole that was kind of a staple in my house that used, and it was a lot of pre-mixed stuff, well, like not like boxed stuff. So this was like a casserole. I remember she'd do it in like, she had this electric skillet and it was all kind of a one pot thing, and you'd brown the ground beef and then you'd put in, you know, canned tomatoes and this other stuff. And then on the top of it went like a cornbread mix across the whole top of it. And so it was just kind of this layered thing. And I remember having that a lot. It wasn't one of my favorite things. When I was a kid, I hated Mexican food.
Why is that?
I wore braces and I had mouth issues where I would get sores. And so the acidity of the tomatoes and the spices just hurt, like, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I didn't really enjoy it all that much. But yeah, I mean, you know, dad grilling steaks and burgers. He had an amazing like Italian chicken recipe he would do on the grill. So it was just a, you know, grilled chicken, but with this kind of Italian spice that he would put on it, almost a lot like you get rotisserie chickens these days with, you know, I'm pretty sure it had like basil and
basil, oregano,
rosemary, a little bit of rosemary and that sort of stuff. So delicious. You know, ribs, burgers, hot dogs. I was a swimmer, and we spent a lot of time at the pool. So there was a lot of summery kind of picnic stuff, Jello casseroles, if people know what those are, in all their flavors, you know, the fruit suspended inside of it. Ugh, it's awful stuff. Like, you would call it salad. We always joke about that too. You know, with my parents being from the Midwest, their idea of what a salad is, mm-hmm. is, you know, there's probably never any lettuce. It's probably like fruit and Cool Whip. And mm-hmm. that was the other thing is like, I remember a lot of that stuff where it was like a lot of, and we joke about this in my family now, coming out of the 50s and 60s, there was a move away from like animal fat products for cooking. Mm-hmm. And so, or even, so everything that was cooked with, or a lot of the stuff that was made was vegetable based. Mm-hmm. So we had Crisco. Mm-hmm. My mom yeah. used a lot yeah. and she used a lot of Crisco recipes and, mm-hmm. and she also worked for Pillsbury for a time. So I remember having Pillsbury, all kinds of Pillsbury products mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. in terms of like, you know, the dinner rolls that come in the can and like all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean by kind of a lot of just like out of the box mm-hmm. processed stuff. We never had butter in my house. We had margarine. Mm-hmm. We very rarely had whipped cream. We had Cool Whip, which mm-hmm. is vegetable oil yeah. based, yeah. like everything. And that yeah. was something, it was a product of the 50s, I think, is mm-hmm. when all that happened.
Yeah.
They yeah. started developing all those products. Mm.
Yeah. So I mean, but it was also like definitely like 60s, 70s time. Like a lot of, I mean, one, especially probably in California, the whole like the hippie movement and a lot of like vegetarianism and all of that. But also at the same time, the whole whole movement against like animal fat or fat in general, but animal fats especially exactly. where everybody was saying
bad
for you and everything. So everything moved to plant-based fats and plant. So I think that kind of coincided with that as well. That's very interesting to see that reflected in in what you remember.
It was definitely reflected in what I grew up eating. And maybe because we're more aware of it now, like mm-hmm. I didn't think about it at the time, mm-hmm. obviously, you know, it was just the food we ate.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very interesting. Did your mom still cook? Like, I mean, you said like prepackaged stuff, but was it like?
Well, she was cooking. It wasn't prepackaged like you mm-hmm. think today, where you go to the store and you get something that's fully cooked and prepared. Mm-hmm. It was more just like a lot of stuff came out of boxes and mixes mm-hmm. and. You know, but I there remember was having sloppy Joes, right? And mm-hmm. that was like Hamburger Helper or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't think she used that, but you know, she wasn't mixing together her own spices mm-hmm. from, you know, a thing of ground beef. It was a lot of, you know, and I think it was again a sign of the time too. She worked part time, so mm-hmm. you know, my dad was at the office all day, and it was like a lot of convenience stuff, mm-hmm. right? You got to get the kids fed. You got to get people off to school and, you know, like a lot of boxed cereal. We didn't have, you know, a big thing on the weekends was my dad would make pancakes mm-hmm. all the time. And he was a little bit of an artist. And so like, I know it's kind of a thing trending today where mm-hmm. People will make like shapes and characters and stuff like that. My dad was doing that from the time I was a little kid. And so mm-hmm. we always had Star Wars characters, you know, like R2-D2 pancake or a mm-hmm. Yoda pancake or mm-hmm. something like that. Yeah. And so that was always a special treat on the weekends. But, you know, like during the week, it was, you know, whatever boxed cereal and off mm-hmm. to school and, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah,
packaged but lunch. And so mm-hmm. a lot of peanut butter and jelly and, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. I mean,
your standard kind of staples.
I mean, it still sounds like she was cooking. I mean, the TV dinners and stuff like that were around.
Time, she worked hard. She was definitely cooking. Yeah. It was not. We weren't going. We did go out occasionally. Mm-hmm. Probably more than some other families. I know mm-hmm. definitely more than my wife's family. So we did eat dinners out. You know, mm-hmm. probably a couple times a month, 2-3 times a month, but. Which was a little bit unusual, but yeah, most of the time we were cooking at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How big
meals? Like I said, a lot of casseroles, mm-hmm. a pot roast, you know, a lot of those convenience things where you can sort of set everything up, throw it in mm-hmm. the oven, you know, mm-hmm. for a time. And it's like a one pot, sort of one dish meal, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. But then there were special occasions too, where we'd break out and we'd have, you know, more kind of, upscale stuff. You mm-hmm. know, I remember, asparagus and Brussels sprouts and you know that sort of stuff too mm-hmm. so
it sounds like it was definitely more like a time thing and less like a skill thing or like not wanting to do it was more like I have to get something done real quick because like family how big
yeah,
is
well,
how big
we
is
were busy Just four of us.
Just four.
So mm-hmm. I have one brother, mm-hmm. and then my mom and my dad. And mm-hmm. yeah, so, but like I said, she was working part-time, mm-hmm. you know, we were doing a lot of activities. I was a pretty heavy swimmer. So, mm-hmm. Especially like once I was in high school, I was up at, you know, 5 a.m. and I was mm-hmm. home maybe at 7 p.m, mm-hmm. you know? And yeah. so you don't have a lot of time for then just meal and, yeah. homework and then,
yeah.
repeat.
Yeah, and go to bed like early as well at that point. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
probably not too early. Yeah.
It's very interesting to see that. Like, that seems to be a commonality across like a lot of like foodie flashbacks I've done. Like, there's definitely this aspect of that time, like, yeah, 70s, 80s, 90s, where like sometimes it was like full-on TV dinners, and sometimes it was like just, as you said, like just reuse, like buying whatever the mix and just cooking
that,
the pick, exactly,
whatever,
cooking,
right?
That, but there was still cooking involved. Like, it wasn't just like reheating it and you're done. Like, so that seems to be, or like opening the can and like at least reheating that.
There was some of that though too. You know, there were definitely meals that were SpaghettiOs, and mm-hmm. there were definitely meals that were, you know, a box of Kraft mac and cheese, mm-hmm. and you know, that mm-hmm. sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, but it varied. It wasn't all the time.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't on occasion that happens, and that's, I mean, even today
we had TV dinners too.
Yeah,
that's, I remember those.
Yeah,
very often those were the things that we were given when my parents went out and we got mm-hmm. babysitters. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was so like babysitters like here. Just throw this in there and feed that to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know?
That makes sense. Was that like a special treat for you kind of at that point then?
I think we liked it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we absolutely did.
Yeah. It's
yeah. yeah. It always had the little dessert in the middle. Mm-hmm. It was terrible. But that was like,
but it was
brownie
different like and special.
Yeah. Cherry pie or whatever it mm-hmm. was.
Yeah. did you at any point get involved in cooking or your brother? Do you remember that?
No, not really. Yeah, we weren't, it wasn't a big thing in mm-hmm. my family. The one exception was probably when my mom's, mother, my grandmother came to visit. Mm-hmm. She, has a Norwegian Swedish background. Mm-hmm. And, one of the big treats is we would all make bread and mm-hmm. just like tons of bread. Mm-hmm. And specifically like the big thing that was the thrill was cardamom rolls.
Mm-hmm.
That yeah, she would good. Make these Swiss cardamom rolls mm-hmm. that were just absolutely fabulous. So we'd be there, my little brother and I helping her and you know, knead the dough, and then it'd be all over, you know, rising with, you mm-hmm. know, towels over it, stuff mm-hmm. like that. And then we roll it out, and we did loaves of bread and rolls mm-hmm. and cardamom rolls. Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds like a whole family thing, like doing it all together.
Yeah.
Did you ever, like, other than bread, bake together? Like, I don't know, Christmas cookies or anything like that?
We did. Yeah, we did do. There was a tradition of doing sugar cookies. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We still use that recipe. and I think that, again, I think that came, I don't know which from side of my family mm-hmm. that came from. But again, a big thing with the Christmas cookies was the decorating. Because like mm-hmm. I said, my dad was sure. a little bit of an artist. And mm-hmm. so we always kind of had fancy sugar cookies. Mm-hmm. But again, like the other thing is I remember it was the Betty Crocker, you know, frosting that came in tubes that you yeah. buy at the store, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't like now in my family, we do the same thing, but we'll mix up, you know, our own icing mm-hmm. and pipe it in bags yeah. and stuff like that. So,
which isn't hard. Like, I mean, it's very easy to do and you know what you're doing.
Yeah. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah. yeah. But, you know, again, at the time, that was just how you did it. It's mm-hmm. just like Betty Crocker had this stuff. You just bought it at the mm-hmm. store and it tastes horrible. It had so much yeah. dye in it, mm-hmm. you know, food dye, especially like the red, you know, and people, there's different people that can taste that red dye. And if you're mm-hmm. a red dye taster, you get that bitter taste from,
mm-hmm.
yeah. especially with Christmas cookies, there was always a lot of red dye, red and green.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that makes sense. I was just thinking about that because like you said, like was it Norwegian heritage basically?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was kind of thinking because that is definitely a tradition in Norway, like making cookies at Christmas, and it's something, it has spread. I mean, it's also a German thing. But
My dad's side is Norwegian and German, and mm-hmm. my mom's side yeah. was Norwegian and Swedish. So mm-hmm. I'm actually half Norwegian.
Wow.
and then a quarter German, a quarter mm-hmm. Swedish. That's my background. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking about that, because that was something we did as kids, especially. It's a fun thing to do over Christmas, like in preparation for it, like just baking sheets and sheets and sheets of cookies of all sorts.
Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, usually half of the dough makes it into the oven, because the other half was eaten. It's eaten before.
Absolutely. Licking the beaters was mm-hmm. always the mm-hmm. the treat,
yeah.
right?
Oh yes, yeah. I remember that. did you cook or do you remember like your grandparents cooking at all, or like when you were visiting?
Yeah, again, outside of my grandmother and doing the bread baking and, mm-hmm. and the rolls, not too much as I was a kid, but we lived in California, and mm-hmm. the rest of my relatives were in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And so we did not see them that frequently, yeah. unfortunately. You know, there was a handful of times mm-hmm. growing up when we actually got together and saw mm-hmm. them. I guess the one exception is when we would go back to Minnesota, especially my dad's area of Minnesota, which is International Falls. Mm-hmm. And for people who don't know, this is like right on the border. It's literally across the river from Canada. So you can like see Canada on the other mm-hmm. side. It's extreme northern United States. It's actually the coldest place in the continental US. So excluding Alaska, it's the mm-hmm. coldest place. And we would go back there occasionally for summers. And a big thing there is fishing, mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot of lakes. And so we would go out and have these, you know, fishing sessions. We'd catch tons of fish, mm-hmm. Mostly walleye, and then bring it back. And we'd have big, you know, fish fry kind mm-hmm. of thing mm-hmm. and celebration there. And that was kind of the whole family getting together. And my dad had a huge family mm-hmm. Up in that area. I remember I went back when I was a kid for a reunion. I think I was about 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. And they counted there were 150 cousins.
Wow. Whew. That's a big family. Jesus.
And like I said, that's when I was 13. It's a mm-hmm. much bigger family now. So yeah. Like there's a big extended family, but they had this big reunion. And mm-hmm. yeah, so I remember doing that. I remember kind of catching all the fish and then coming back, and the whole family was kind of involved mm-hmm. in prepping and putting on this big kind of fish fry. So mm-hmm.
yeah, but as you said, that probably didn't happen that often. I mean, that was like, I mean, one, no. very, very far away. And then two, at that point, I don't think flights were as cheap as they are nowadays. So
yeah.
Driving.
Yeah,
also.
we actually drove back.
Wow.
Well, drove back and then my mom flew and met us there. And then mm-hmm. we all drove back from there together. So it was the one time I did a sort of cross-country mm-hmm. Driving trip. Which yeah. is a lot of fun too.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. But it also takes a long time. I mean, that's like, whatever, a week maybe?
We did it in 4 days,
yeah.
I think.
Okay. Yeah. Still.
My dad did a lot of driving, mm-hmm. a lot of hours driving.
And probably not as fun with like kids or two kids in the car and everything at that point.
He did a good job keeping us busy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
We made it.
Good idea. Yeah. So. Like when do you remember like starting to get at all interested in cooking? I mean, I know that you, at least nowadays, you do cook every now and then. I mean, you do barbecues and so on. So there must have been a starting point where you like started getting interested in that.
Probably when I had a family.
Okay.
To be honest.
Relatively late then.
Yeah, relatively late mm-hmm. in life. And more out of necessity than mm-hmm. probably a passion. Like I said, my wife is probably the person in the family that has gotten really into cooking mm-hmm. and has started to become really passionate about it. And I reap the benefits because mm-hmm. the food's delicious. Mm-hmm. Like it's just progressively yeah. more and more amazing as she's kind of honed and grown her skills. I've never been one to really cook much. Like I do a lot of the grilling. Mm-hmm. So like we just had steaks last night, and so I'll do the grilling. trying to think if there's anything I really, you know, pancakes for the kids, because that was kind of something my dad did for us occasionally. Mm-hmm. But now they're at an age where they're doing that on their own too. Yeah, so they're becoming sort of their own cooks, and mm-hmm. they help out a lot with mm-hmm. the cooking and the prep and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So, mm-hmm.
yeah. So before you met your wife and like got a family, like how did you survive until then? I mean, I'm guessing you moved out at some point.
Yes, typical college stuff. Well, my wife and I met in college, so we've been together since college. So it was like there wasn't a big gap. There was, mm-hmm. you know, 4 or 5 years where I was
still
kind of on my own. Mm-hmm. That one's pretty easy to answer, because when I was in college, you know, it was a lot of your typical college meals. So there was ramen and a lot of spaghetti mm-hmm. and a lot of, you know, again, probably, you know, grilling hamburgers or hot dogs or whatever, mm-hmm. Just because of budgets, you know, mac and cheese, mm-hmm. top ramen, you know, your typical kind of college stuff. But we'd actually eat out a fair amount. Mm-hmm. But only because in college, I worked all through college, so mm-hmm. I had a job. Mm-hmm. So I had kind of some discretionary income that I generated for myself. And mm-hmm. then the other thing was a lot of the meals were provided by my work, because I worked at a couple of different pizza places. There was a lot of pizza.
Oh, yeah.
Got eat. Pizza, calzones, mm-hmm. All that sort of stuff. So I would get free meals, you mm-hmm. know, from where I was working, mm-hmm. You know, and then you also had a dining pass on campus. So mm-hmm. there were a lot of campus restaurants you could eat at. There was mm-hmm. a sandwich shop and a place you could go and get, you mm-hmm. know, breakfast. So, they had some great omelets and things like that. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I was a swimmer, so I was on campus really pretty early. So mm-hmm. usually finish swim workout and then head over to the dining hall and, you know, get breakfast or whatever. And, mm-hmm. So I had a limited meal plan where I could get sort of breakfast and lunch there. And then I mm-hmm. really only had to worry about dinner mm-hmm. for myself. So, mm-hmm.
yeah. But I mean, you still like somehow you said like burgers and spaghetti and so on. I mean, you still somehow prepared them. So like,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
You somehow learned how to do that.
Live with roommates, right? Mm-hmm. We'd all cook together. We'd, you know, have you know, either grilling sessions or, mm-hmm. You know, do big pasta dinners mm-hmm. with spaghetti and meatballs and garlic mm-hmm. bread. And, mm-hmm. you know, but yeah, you just sort of figure that stuff out, I guess. Mm-hmm. Again, none of it was ever really fancy.
Yeah. You know, doesn't have to
like
be.
No one was. But again, the internet was just becoming a thing. Mm-hmm. So I think that's changed a lot too. Mm-hmm. Like the access to information.
Yeah.
Sort of helps, right?
It does.
So if you want to do something now, there's a YouTube video mm-hmm. or there's a recipe you can find, or mm-hmm. like, so if you get a hankering for something, you want to do something, you mm-hmm. can figure out how to do it pretty easily. You can get the ingredients list. You can put something together. So I'll do that on occasion when, you know, I'm into something. Mm-hmm. You know, I want some sort of new chili recipe or something like that, and mm-hmm. go online and, you know, find that and
yeah.
throw it together, see how it is. And then you kind of start to mix it up and, mm-hmm. and get your own spin on it, right? It's like, oh, I like this flavor. I don't like that flavor. Maybe next time I make it, I'm going to change it this way. You know, maybe not as much chili. Maybe, you know, we'll add some pork instead of just beef, you know, that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of the, like, what was the student cookbook back in the day where, like, everybody had it because there was no internet where you could look up, like, the basic things like spaghetti and meatballs and so on. That's the internet nowadays. You just go on YouTube or you go on whatever, I don't know, all recipes or whatever, and you just look, or just Google it, and you just look up, like, how to make spaghetti and meatballs, and you'd get, like, a million results and just follow that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, exactly. But I mean, that wasn't when, like, even when you were on campus, that I don't think that existed yet, or at least maybe.
Not really.
Not maybe there really. Was one just, recipe
it
somewhere.
Was just being born, you know, like it was, we were using Lynx, which is mm-hmm. a text-based browser, and, mm-hmm. and we were using, you know, what was the other thing that was like big then? I can't remember all the names of stuff, but there was mm-hmm. no, there was no, you know, graphical internet, you know, to speak of. Yeah. It was just like, you could find information, but you know, you had a 2400 baud modem if you were lucky.
there might have been a recipe somewhere, but you had to know where to find it.
Yeah, a lot of it was just handed down and what you knew and, you know, people you would meet. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, I mean, swimming was a big part of my life too. So there were a lot of swim team like parties and events where we'd just have big, you know, usually pasta was the big thing, right? You were trying to carve up for a meet or something like that.
So yeah. Did you
remember a lot of pasta because it was convenient, cheap, you know, easy to make.
Easy to make for large groups. I mean, that's still like a go-to for me. Like whenever I have a larger group, like make pasta. Everybody likes it. And it's super easy and cheap to make, so why not? Did your parents like give you any like, I don't know, advice or anything when you moved out, or like hand over like the student cookbook and say here are the recipes like so you can survive or anything like that? Or
I don't remember that being a thing. It should have been, right? Like they should have prepped me in some way, you know, like probably beyond a home economics class that I was required to take in high school. Mm-hmm. No, I think I was just kind of thrown out there on my own in a lot of ways and just sort of left to figure it out. I don't know how I figured it out. Like I said, it was probably just, you know, asking people, living with roommates, learning from them.
Yeah.
I'm sure my mom gave me some basic skills, you know, like how to boil a pot of water so I could make some mac and cheese or something like that. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah. There wasn't a lot of cooking training in my life. I guess I could always call them up if I had a question or wanted to know about something. I don't remember being given a cookbook, although my mom, like I said, she worked for Pillsbury and I think she had this Pillsbury cookbook that she, and it had, you know, a lot of different kinds of recipes in it. So I don't remember her handing that down. I think it was probably mostly just calling up and saying, hey, how do I remember you used to make this. How do I make that? And then she would just sort of share the recipe over the phone or something like that. Yeah. And then I could go out and get the ingredients and then figure out how to make it.
Yeah. And then probably also just watching your parents cooking before and just like some things you just pick up. I mean, even if you've never done it yourself, you just, the general concept is a known thing. Like, you know how to cook pasta without like reading a recipe for it. You just have seen it a million times.
Right.
Like, it's roughly this. And then the rest you figure out like by experimenting.
I'm sure I had to call her up to figure out how to like hard boil an egg. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm sure I did not have that skill when I left for college. Not that it's a hard skill, right?
But no. But it has to come from somewhere. Like, so, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, after like you meet your wife, you probably moved in with her at some point, or like, I mean, it wasn't your wife at that point, but like you moved in together. Did you at all cook together like before you had kids at all?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We would do that. I'm getting older, Patrice. Like my memory is like fading. Like it's all sort of blurred and mushed together. So it's hard. It's hard to remember. But yeah, we absolutely did. Was there anything in particular? Again, I hate to like sound so boring, but like until recently, you know, until we really started having kids and we went through this session where we realized we really need to branch out our sort of flavor palette, you know, it was a lot of the same kinds of foods, you know, it wasn't really, well, we did a lot of Mexican food, you know, burritos, tacos, nachos, you know, that sort of stuff we did, you know, grilling burgers or steaks or chicken, that sort of stuff. And then for like side dishes, you know, is your typical stuff. Like we might do, you know, fresh corn on the grill. We do, you know, grilled or roasted asparagus, roasted veggies, like cauliflower and broccoli and, you know, these sorts of things. Have a salad on the side, you know, usually just a mixed green salad, a lot of iceberg lettuce, you know, your very kind of plain Jane vanilla stuff. And, you know, outside of that, if we were having different stuff, we were probably going out to eat, you know, if we were going out to get Chinese or, you know, if we were going to have, you know, even back then, I don't remember eating a lot of the kind of Thai food, Indian food mm-hmm. that we eat now. So I was yeah. we were very late bloomers and sort of discovering mm-hmm. food and getting into food. And since that, though, it's just been, we've mm-hmm. been, you know, going kind yeah. of crazy, like in comparison, you know, like compared to other people, it's probably pretty mild, but like for us, you know, it's a lot more exploration, you mm-hmm. know, like I said, just a couple months ago, my wife said, yeah, you know, I really want to start learning to do more Indian cuisine. And she mm-hmm. ordered just all kinds of Indian spices. And we've been trying different kinds of dishes, a lot more vegetarian dishes, potato based stuff, mm-hmm. which is, you know, kind of big in Indian culture. Mm-hmm. So different kinds of curries and that sort of thing. So, and even expanding our rice, like, you know, like,
yeah,
I remember growing up, rice was like minute rice. Like mm-hmm. I told you, like out of a box, and, you know, now we're doing, you know, jasmine rice or basmati rice mm-hmm. and, yeah. you know, really cooking mm-hmm. it ourselves from scratch. And,
yeah.
you know, and you think that sounds like such a minor thing, but when it's like sort of your base or your, mm-hmm. you know, for your meal, it makes a huge difference,
it
you
does.
Know, the quality and yeah. the kind of ingredient that you're using. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, that's been really, really late coming to our home cooking mm-hmm. environment, you know, like eating out is a whole different thing, mm-hmm. but like, you know, in terms of bringing in house and doing a lot more in house. And that's been great because, the huge advantage of that obviously is it's much more affordable. I mean,
oh, yes.
that was sort of some of the genesis of this mm-hmm. too, was just like, man, we're eating out way too much mm-hmm. and spending too much money, and we kind of need to rein in the budget. And my wife was getting into it. She had a little more time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of become her, one of mm-hmm. her passions and one of her things. And like I said, I'm just the lucky guy who gets to reap the benefits of that.
Yeah. But I mean, what you said about like the, what you called the boring things and like the simple things, maybe, I think that's not uncommon. That's something I hear a lot. And I mean, I also remember from like myself, I mean, you start out with the things you know. You start out, like, especially when you're starting out cooking a little bit more, even if it's very, very simple, you start with the things you know, because you know how they're supposed to taste like, and you try to replicate that, and that's the starting point. And then once you have kind of mastered that, or at least gotten to a point where either you're bored by it or like you're good enough, you start branching out, and then you start to discover more and more things, and you start to experiment. So I think that's totally normal. It's actually very interesting, like the whole what you said about eating out, and then starting, like, especially when budget became more an issue, or like, I think to some extent also probably boredom about eating out.
Yeah,
that's a very, like, very American thing I see. Like I talked to a friend of mine from Arizona, and she said the same thing. Like, they were eating out all the time. Like, she barely could cook. Like, I mean, she had the basic skills from her parents, but she barely yeah. did. And then she started like getting interested in it, and budget became a bit of an issue, because you're paying a lot of money for like, even if you're going to a cheap restaurant, you're still paying a lot of money over time.
Yep.
And then she started realizing that there is more out there, and that there's a lot of like fun stuff you can experiment with, even if you don't have the skills yet. You can build that up and figure out, as you said, like the million different variants of rice that are available, and just see what you can do with that, and see like what, I don't know, like wild rice versus like brown rice versus white rice and basmati and jasmine and like all of those different things. And you figure out, oh, hey, I can change a dish by just changing the rice out. And
exactly,
it tastes
yeah.
completely different, stuff like that. So that seems to be a parallel there.
Yeah,
it's very
yeah.
interesting.
It is interesting how something so simple, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people wouldn't think it's just rice. You know,
yeah,
rice is rice.
Exactly.
Is rice.
Yeah,
it's that white stuff that
yeah.
you know sits under my under the thing that I'm eating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just filler for most people. It's just like just a filler to like make it a full meal, kind of. Yeah, and then you realize there is more to it than that. And then you like get into maybe an Italian risotto or something. It's like all rice and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that really changed up, I think, our thing was mm-hmm. Getting, you know, one of these food delivery companies as a sponsor. Actually, I had a couple mm-hmm. of them on the podcast, and, mm-hmm. you know, getting delivered the different ingredients. Mm-hmm. And so like, budgetary wise, I don't know how great those things are, but in terms of food discovery, mm-hmm. they're amazing.
Yeah.
You know, sure. I guess it just depends on your situation in terms of cost. Mm-hmm. It's certainly more cost effective, I think, than eating out.
Yeah.
and then the side benefit though, is having those recipes. And more importantly for us, it was sort of being exposed. And that's really what kind of triggered this other just internal family discussion that said, you know what, we should probably be trying to explore mm-hmm. more flavors for the kids and stuff like that. So yeah. that they have, you know, essentially what we didn't have. I really didn't have a broad, probably flavor palette coming mm-hmm. out of being a kid. You know, mm-hmm. we didn't branch out too much in terms of we went out to eat, but it was always kind of the same restaurants mm-hmm. and the same kinds of food, you know, Mexican, Italian, American, mm-hmm. you know, that was pretty much the range. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't remember going out and getting Indian food as a kid, probably mm-hmm. because my parents were sensitive that I wasn't really into spicy foods. Mm-hmm. Like that was probably why we never went to an Indian restaurant, mm-hmm. you know, and if we had Chinese, it was the very Americanized, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Chinese, you know, it was like, I remember my favorite dish was always sweet and sour pork or whatever, but it was mm-hmm. the very, you know, watered down, like yeah. not Chinese food. Mm-hmm. Right.
For sure.
So I think when we started getting these meal delivery things mm-hmm. and we started seeing the different ingredients and the different kinds of things that you could do, I think that really opened up mm-hmm. This idea of, yeah, we should explore this a little bit more. And we were finding flavors that we would have never thought to expose the kids to. And they're like, oh, we really, really like this. Like mm-hmm. I remember chimichurri was one of the dishes we did. Mm-hmm. And now that's a staple in our family. And my wife has started to make her own recipe or get her own recipe and sort of make it from scratch on mm-hmm. her own. And we love that stuff. It's delicious, you know, and like, that's a flavor I don't think we ever would have mm-hmm. sought out otherwise. So, yeah.
Or it would have been like a massive accident that you stumbled across it somewhere on like at a restaurant, like more or less, like, I don't know, traveling and going out with someone else, and you might have exactly. maybe discovered it. But I mean, yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, even for someone like me who grew up around food and like a lot of different food, and like, I mean, I've cooked since I was like 4 or something. The most influential time, like in my 20s, was as you said, like the delivery services were coming in. I also got like a box of veggies, like local vegetables every week. And it was obviously different things, like all around the year. Like there was stuff in winter that I didn't even know there was anything growing in winter. Like in December, January, I was like, what's growing out there? And stuff came in, and every week I had to figure out, okay, what do I do with this? Like I've never used this. What do I do with it? And it's had the same thing also with the delivery service. I mean, you get like every week something that you've probably never tried before or not done this way maybe before. And that like pushes you to open up a little bit and also experiment with it. And then you keep like certain recipes around and like, oh, this was good. And then you start experimenting with it and like figuring out different ways of doing it and developing your own version of it. So you learn
your palate and mm-hmm. your family's sort of palate and flavor profile and like what you're into and what you're not into. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's almost just as important,
yeah,
right?
It
it's
is.
Like, oh yeah, I really mm-hmm. don't like this. Like that's something that we'll just sort of, you know, mm-hmm. stay away from. It was an experience. It was great. Mm-hmm. We tried it, but that's not for us or that's mm-hmm. not for me. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is totally, totally fine and totally normal that you discover things that you don't like. I mean, it's, as you said, almost as important because it's not everything is for everyone, but there is so much out there. So, I mean, yeah, it's like those delivery things are probably like, I mean, if you're on a budget, it's probably not the best idea because you're still paying extra for like the convenience factor. Yep. On the other hand, yeah, I mean, it takes away some of the planning and the thinking. And if that's not your thing,
that's always the big stress.
Yeah,
in this house.
It is.
It's like
it is.
What to make for dinner. Like, yeah. What do you want?
Yeah, it is.
Unfortunately, the kids have gotten a little bit, they each have different dietary restrictions mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That we've discovered over the years. And so that's a little bit more challenging. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got one that's milk and one that's mm-hmm. gluten. Mm-hmm. And so, like, how do you even resolve that? Like, it starts to get a little bit tricky.
Yeah, we have the same thing in my family. I mean, it's like, you have to work around that. But on the other hand, even those restrictions push you to do different things, because like, okay, I have to, like, I don't know, you can't eat milk or you can't use milk, so like, what else can we do? Like, what can we?
We go through all the different alternatives. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Coconut, almond, rice.
Yeah, exactly.
What stuff we but try
that,
to
get. That pushes you to yeah, discover different things and figure out like different solutions and different recipes and.
That's why Indian has become a good thing, because mm-hmm. a lot of sauces are using coconut milk instead of cow milk, dairy milk,
And also very little gluten. So that helps. if you're skipping the bread, that is.
yeah, you don't have to have the bread.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Something you brought up, the experimentation part, I wanted to ask you about. You said you start with a recipe and then you cook it like as is the first time, or is it already like changed?
No. Yeah, always as is the mm-hmm. very, very first time, you know, almost exactly to mm-hmm. to the recipe. The only exception to that, I think, is when there's comments or something where a bunch of people have made it, because mm-hmm. usually we're pulling something off of a recipe site online mm-hmm. or something like that. Mm-hmm. So if there's a high level of comments where people are saying, yeah, this was great, but, and they're all saying the same thing mm-hmm. and the same adjustment, well, we might start with that adjustment. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, then we'll try it. We'll have it in our family. And we do have a discussion afterwards. Like, what'd you think? You know, what did you like? What you didn't like? Oh, we think we should add more, mm-hmm. you know, it needed a little more salt. Or, oh, mm-hmm. it wasn't quite spicy enough for us. You know, mm-hmm. we'd like a little more red chili pepper in this or whatever mm-hmm. it might be. So, mm-hmm. yeah, or less. You know, sometimes it's like, sometimes. Whoa, that was way too much, way too much curry in that one. Like, mm-hmm. let's back it off a little bit. And so mm-hmm. then we tweak it for the next time that we make mm-hmm. it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the first time is always like to the letter almost.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My wife has a science background. Mm-hmm. So she's like everything she gets. And it's funny because now it's starting to come back, you know, that we do, you know, when we would cook together in the past, mm-hmm. It would drive her crazy because I'm not a measurer. I just do everything to taste. So mm-hmm, it's just like, and her mom's the same way. Mm-hmm. And so it's been frustrating for her because she'll ask for recipes from when she was a kid. And her mom's like, I don't know. You just do this and this and this and this and this. It's like, well, what are the measurements? Like, I don't have measurements. You just do this and this and this and this and this.
Or you get measurements, but they're wrong because they were just like what she remembered what she put in, not what she really put in.
And so, yeah, my wife's also very big on consistency. You mm-hmm. know, she likes stuff that's repeatable. And again, mm-hmm. I think this comes from her science background. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't have exact measurements, it's very hard to repeat mm-hmm. when you finally do hone in on this is what everybody likes. Mm-hmm. Like, she wants to be able to definitely repeat it again mm-hmm. and not have it be mm-hmm. different.
Does your wife like baking?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
that's what I thought. Like with that background, like baking is very like scientific. Like, I mean, it's one of the things you really shouldn't experiment too much, because I mean, you can do like little things once you know what you're doing, but it's very hard to really experiment, because like even like, I don't know, 10 grams off somewhere might make a difference.
Yeah, so. Yeah. A couple of Christmases ago, I finally got her a scale, and that was mm-hmm. a big hit. Kitchen scale.
I can imagine. So last question I wanted to ask you today, because you mentioned it before, you started cooking with your kids. So I wanted to like dive a little bit into that. Like, how did that start? Like, was that something early age they were just around and just started?
It actually came not mm-hmm. super early age, but from the time they probably got old enough to be in the kitchen mm-hmm. safely, I guess I would mm-hmm.
yeah, sure.
You know,
yeah.
Like around hot pots and, mm-hmm. you know, burners and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's my wife would include them a lot and, you know, let them help out. And it starts mm-hmm. out simple, you know, with just doing measuring ingredients and stuff like that. But a lot of that comes more from the parenting side, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. And just a conscious discussion that we had with each other and about, you know, when you mentioned earlier, you know, I kind of always sort of felt I was sent off to college, and my parents were great. They didn't do anything wrong, but like, I don't know that I had all the independent skills that I probably needed mm-hmm. like right out of the gate. And so it was always kind of a conscious decision growing up that, you know, we would help give our kids those skills. And so that's just part of it, you know, and it's not just a fun sort of family thing you can do together, but you know, you're teaching them those skills so that when they do go off on their own, they're going to sort of have all of that. So it's really came, I think, more out of independence than necessarily wanting them to, you know, have a passion for cooking or learn how to cook. It was more about the practicality. Obviously that's, you know, depending upon the kid, I have one who's kind of more into it than the other, has developed into into a passion for, specifically for her, it's baking. She loves desserts. So she does a lot of different kinds of dessert recipes. As a matter of fact, I think there's something in the fridge right now that's kind of like a raspberry, how'd she describe it as? It's like a kind of a part, not a parfait, but you know, it's like a mix of, a raspberry mousse and some sort of cake pop or something like that, she said. So
I'll be right over.
But yeah, no, so I think it really came out of, you know, just trying to make them independent. So we got them very early age into sort of doing their own laundry and just helping out around the house. And so it was more just, it's life skills.
I think
it was really what it was born out of a lot. You know, and then it's just fun and you get to have good food at the end of it. So, you know, like there's a lot of advantages.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, as you said, it's not just cooking and like the skills that come with that. It's also the life skills that you get out of it. One, creating something yourself and then like having the result at the end, enjoying the result at the end. It's like responsibility. I mean, going like working with knives and like hot plates and all of that, and like being responsible, like working with those responsibly. There's so much like that is around the process of cooking that you learn, like collaborating together, like especially if you're working with your family and or with your brother or sister, not killing
Absolutely.
Each other. So I mean,
planning, I mean, it goes across the board.
Yeah,
you know,
it does.
So,
Yeah, it's very interesting. We could probably do another podcast just about parenting in the kitchen. Maybe in the future we should do that.
probably, yeah.
Yeah, it is very important and something I feel a lot of people forget about or miss. I know families that like where the parents are totally into cooking, but they never cook with their kids. Because like, I don't know, the kids are always like more in a nuisance in the kitchen kind of thing, or at least that's how they're viewing them. And then like, they never pick that up. They never pick that up and they never get like interested in it. And later on they struggle with it. So I think you're right. It is an important thing to learn, like to have those basic skills at least. Like it doesn't have to go deeper than that. Like if you're not into it, you're not into it. But at least like, at least, as you said, like at least know how to whatever, make pancakes or cook water,
boil an egg.
Yeah, exactly.
Hard boil an egg.
Yeah.
So like that's like I said, like my one daughter is not super into it, but so the only requirement was like, okay, you're gonna at least be able to make yourself a meal when you go off to college. And that's all the farther you have to take it. You don't have to be a gourmet cook. Yeah. You don't have to like learn all these other skills. You're going to have the basic things you need that you can provide for yourself. And you know, that's where we sort of left it with her. So she doesn't do as much cooking with my wife as my other daughter, who's like really into, especially the baking. And like, I'll come out, you know, cause again, I'm getting older. I go to bed early sometimes and there's been more than one night where I'll come out at like, you know, 10, 11 at night and she's baking some sort of dessert, you know, like brownies or whatever it might be. So, I got hungry. I just was in the mood for this. And she just does it all on her own. So, I know that's sort of the reward. That was sort of the goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I know that feeling. Like I'll make a pizza at 2 a.m. if I feel like it. Why not?
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. All right. Thank you so much for doing this. It was super fun.
Thank you really for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, you were definitely on my list. Like, I have a list of people I wanted to interview, just like people I know and like other people that I might not know as well. But you were definitely on my list because I know that you were enjoying food at least. And I was like, I mean, that's not a requirement, to be honest, because I've interviewed Tom Ferry, for example, from like... he's in Mountain View. He's not a foodie at all. Like for him, food is like very functional. It was super interesting to see and to understand that, and like where he comes from, and like how that developed and what he's really interested in. And then we realized, like, he might not be, like, food might be functional for him, but he likes desserts. And, like, stuff like that, you discover, like, okay, it's not as black and white as he, like, presented it originally.
It's like, probably not as black and white as a lot of people think, right? Yeah, it's a great thing to be doing, because, mm-hmm. like, this discussion around food, everybody's food experience is different. So I think it's a great concept. And happy to be on episode 15, because that's actually my family's lucky number growing up.
Oh,
nice.
It's
a weird, I'm not into numerology mm-hmm. or anything like that, mm-hmm. but 15 always just keeps mm-hmm. coming up and up and up again. Like, my second daughter was born on the 15th. So.
Oh, wow. You've been doing 15 years of MacCast now?
I've been doing 15 years of MacCast. This is a lucky year. It's been a good, well, I don't know what to say if it's been a good year. I was going to say it's been a good year, but it's been a weird year.
Good year for MacCast, maybe.
Good year for the podcast. Yeah. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah. The year is not 2015, so maybe that's why. All right. Yeah. Thank you so much for doing this. Let the people that don't know you yet know where they can find you.
Oh, it's really simple. I do an Apple Mac-based podcast where we cover all things Macintosh and iOS and stuff like that. So if you're into technology, specifically into Apple products, you can find me at maccast.com and pretty much Maccast everywhere on social media.
Awesome. You can find everything I'm doing at thepatrice.com, and you can find this very podcast on foodieflashback.com. And if you're like Adam, you like podcaster or not, doesn't matter. You want to be on the show. You want to talk about your family history of food and what your kids are making, or if you don't have kids, what you're making, for example. Then just reach out to me at Foodie Flashback on Twitter, or there's also like a little form on foodieflashback.com that you can fill out, and then I'll be in touch and we'll set something up. And yeah, with that, thank you so much for listening. Thanks, Adam, again for being here. Talk to you next time.
Oh, thank you for having me.